Welcome to the Two Stewards Show. It is just so difficult. There are no opportunities. I'm so busy. I'm so stressed. Everyone is against me. The previous generation had it way easier. I can't afford a house, and even if I could, it wouldn't be big enough to fit more than one kid. The future is bleak. I don't make enough money. I have to work constantly and tirelessly to make ends meet. I have to leave my family and community to immigrate to Canada. They don't even have churches or schools there, so we have to make them by hand. I have to live in a two-bedroom shack in the middle of the wilderness with my 10 siblings. There's no toilet or insulation. My bed sheets freeze to the wall every night. We all share a potato for dinner. My shoes are made out of wood. Today, Mark and I are joined by producer Gideon. What good has ever come out of enduring something difficult? This time, we are discussing answers to the quandary we all find ourselves in. And in the spirit of enduring difficulty, we have made the audio poor quality on this episode, but it is for your benefit. The Two Stewards Show is not financial advice and is for entertainment purposes only. And now, put your avocado toast aside and let's get into it.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the Two Stewards Show. My name is Mark. I'm here with Brent.
Hello, folks.
And today we have another special guest, a visitor.
Special.
Gideon.
We brought him on because Mark does not know much about this topic that we're going to talk about because he is so old.
Yes.
Bring the average age down like 50 years.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, we had a viewer question that we thought, you know, this is a good question. We should do an episode on this. And it's to do with young people, affordability, buying houses and stuff. And
it wasn't so much of a question as a rant.
Yeah, I'm just sick of these kids with their avocado toast and their purple hair complaining that they can't afford anything. But Gideon said, you know, maybe he's got a point. So and Brent too. So maybe we should talk about it and just go through some of the affordability issues. So, I mean, the basic question is, like, you guys talk about this a lot, but is it really possible for young people to buy a house? And yeah.
I've never seen a young person owning a house, so get a few. Yeah.
No, maybe so there is no question that affordability in Canada has decreased massively, right? It used to be, I think, 1980, like the average house was four times your wages. Now we're at probably eight times regular wage. So yeah, affordability has decreased for sure. But we still think it's possible, not necessarily easy, but possible. So I don't know. I thought we could maybe like zoom out a little bit.
Yeah. What's the context for young people today in the context of like recent history? Because I think the biggest thing for young people is I can't do this compared to or relative to the previous generation, right? So
yes.
You don't look at your own life and where you're at and just the situation. You say, well, where I'm at, but compared to the previous generation, they had it so much easier. So why was that? And is that a realistic comparison that people should be making? It seems logical that you just compare, like, well, my parents had it easier than I do.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Now, when you say my parents, I mean, my parents. No, but my parents came in the 50s.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas, like, your parents were sort of second generation.
Galileo and yeah. They came over on the Spanish galleons, right?
Copernicus. Yeah, that's right. The Dutch and the Spanish were fighting.
Oh.
We were probably chasing them and just ended up in Canada. Yeah. So I have a different perspective because my parents, when they first got married, lived in a shack, basically, right? Like above a garage or something.
Yeah.
Above a manger. right? With running water, with not a lot of insulation. They had kids there, right? And they weren't like, we got to wait until we have all these things so that our kids can have perfect lives, right? They just had them and they got on with life. Whereas, like, you guys, you're sort of second generation.
Yeah.
Right? Which is what a lot of people look at and they're like, well, we should be able to do what they did. And the reality is times have changed. We had low interest rates for a long time. Not even necessarily when your parents were around, were buying a home, but, you know, from the 90s on kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
It was low rates. And so we have these expectations of cheap, easy money. But, you know, let's look at previous generations, and was it that easy for them?
Do you think we just have more time now to whine about it because we're not busy out in the field? Kids get all this free time to go and whine about it?
Yes.
And technology to whine about it on?
Yeah,
Opa's people. Out in the field digging up potatoes, and he's like, yeah, I'm just going to send a quick tweet about how bad my back hurts right now.
And then his wife was like, ooh, I'm going to make some Dutch guacamole. And that's just mashed potatoes, by the way.
Yeah, okay.
And post it on Pinterest.
Yeah.
No, so, okay, we got two different.
Well, this is the idea of being wealthy, like quote unquote, being wealthy, has kind of changed, right? Because nowadays we have a lot of perks and different things that generation didn't have, right? Like a lot of different parts of our life are easier. So young person today, you know, you have running water, you have a toilet in your house, like you don't have to go outside and shop and stack firewood just to heat your, like those sorts of things, right? So you have, in a sense, you're wealthier, right?
Our standard of living is much higher. Just the information we have at our fingertips, right? My kids, I don't know. They don't know what a non-touchscreen device
is. But it's in your head.
What's that?
It's not in your head, the information, but it's on your fingertips.
Well, yeah, no, everything is, standards of living are much higher. But I think there's a couple different attitudes, right? There's one, the attitude of...
Mark.
No, the younger folks who I'm always yelling at, right? Who just are like helpless and they can't do anything. But there's other young folks who are like, you know, genuinely, trying. You know, I'm trying, I'm working, I think I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, and I still can't get ahead.
And that's where this question comes out of, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's not out of that sort of feebleness, that feeble mindset.
Yeah, I'm working full time, and I'm spending my free time trying to learn and get ahead and figure out what else I can do, and still it seems out of reach.
Yeah. So I think maybe we set the stage with a couple, I don't know, our expectations, my expectations or theories on how you do things, right? We've talked about it before, right? What's a young person to do? And again, not for every single young person, but in general, get married, have kids, you know, and then eventually buy a house if that's what you want. Like we think that buying a house is a pretty good idea for most young couples. Now, does everybody fit into that mold, right? Where you're going to get married relatively young, you're going to have children relatively young, and do these things? Like, there's so many people that aren't, right? You had an example.
We have a rental unit on the market, and we had a young couple come out to look at it, and like they're 30 years old around there. They're both working. And they had the opportunity as their parents have a house and they were trying to downsize, and they were willing to sell them the house. I think it's in Burlington. So a nice area. They're willing to sell the house at a massive discount.
And they could afford it, right?
And like they're both working. They could afford it. They had a bit of money saved up. And their goal, like I asked them their goal was to buy a house. And it's like, okay, well, you want to buy a house. You can afford it. You have the money. And the guy, he was in contracting. So like he can fix stuff up. He's got the tools and like he knows what he's doing. So I'm like, that's a no-brainer. You got an opportunity to buy a discounted house in a nice area. Right?
Yeah,
like Burlington's desirable. Everybody wants to be on that side of the.
Even if you don't stay there,
even just to get in, right? And the response is more like, you know, no, we don't want the responsibility. We want to be able to travel. We don't want to have like, you know, this. I have to fix the roof or like these unexpected expenses or whatever, right? And it's like, you know, how many people just love to have that opportunity? They won't. But instead, they want to pay like a big portion of their monthly income to rent and like forego any equity. And I just found that mind boggling.
So worry about it.
Yeah.
Just so they don't have to. Well,
yeah. So if you relinquish your responsibilities, like I don't want those responsibilities, like you also relinquish some rights. Well, no, you do, right? Yeah. Like,
let's dive into that a little bit more. What do you mean?
Well, in general, you have rights and responsibilities, and you don't get one without the other.
And as
in most of life,
as your responsibilities go up, your rights go down.
Yes.
Blank stare. I don't know.
Yeah. Wait a minute. I didn't know we were going to do math.
Well, like if you take on more responsibilities, right? Your rights go, like if you're, if you have a kid, all of a sudden you have more responsibility, but you know, you don't have a free Friday night because your kid is needing you, right? So
So
I should have a right to go out every Friday night, and no, you have a kid, now you have a responsibility, you don't have the right.
Yeah, and so,
from Mark's perspective, there's different groups of young people, and there's one group, which is the avocado toast group. It's just
don't forget the purple hair.
Right? Hey, it's not my fault. The government and all the other people are, whatever, making things happen to me, and I can't do anything about it to get ahead. But there is another group of young people, I feel like, who are really trying, and they want to get married and have kids and still own a house and still be able to give and whatever, give their kids a good upbringing too.
Yeah.
So what do we say for them? Like,
so, I mean, first of all, I think it starts, you have to go back a little bit, and it starts with parents. And like, so this isn't, you know, if you're listening and you're in this situation, this isn't going to help you, but, you know, maybe with your kids.
Classic Two Stewards show.
Yeah.
We're here to not help you.
Hey, this is for entertainment value only, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Good advice, too late.
No, but when we're, you know, we're talking about having a family. So that means when you raise your kids, you need to teach them stuff, right?
Right.
And I heard, I can't remember some, I think a preacher on the internet talking about, you know, how people are like, oh, I'm adulting now, right? Like the idea is you're finally, you know, in your mid-20s, you finally leave home and now you have to engage in being an adult. And he's like, that's nonsense. You should be an adult before you leave home.
Yeah.
So that's the parent's responsibility, is to make sure your kids have those tools to deal with life, to deal with stress, to deal with maybe owning a home, like fixing a home, so that when they run into this stuff, like learn how to change a tire, when you run into it for the first time, you're not like, ah, I don't know what to do. I'll just pay someone else to do it for me, right?
Yeah.
And that's a big problem.
Is that reasonable to expect? Maybe that's...
Okay, is it...
That I think people just know how to fix stuff or know how to...
I think it's reasonable to expect. Does it actually happen? Not so much.
Right.
But I mean, I see young people like that, right, in general. I don't know, Gid, I feel like if you had a problem at a house or something, you'd... I mean, maybe because of a little bit the industry you're in, but just a problem in life in general, you wouldn't cry and like go, you know, crawl back into bed and be like, I can't deal with this, right? You'd be like, okay, I gotta...
Well, Gideon keeps saying like, that's the other group of people, the avocado toast. Like we're talking about.
Yeah, so... the avocado toast group, like, what do you...
I feel like that's the title of this episode.
Like, for them, it's almost... Like, how do you even help them if they don't want to help themselves? Like, they have to come to that by themselves. Like, okay, take responsibility in my life. Like, it's not all someone else's fault. But for this other group, like, you don't necessarily need to know how to change a tire, but just even to understand, like, things like that happen.
And yeah, they have a cost.
In the stream world with your parents, like, you still have responsibilities. Things happen in life, and you got to be able to accept that and to still, like... Ever know how to fix it or know how to get someone to fix it or
You can't possibly most of us can't possibly know how to do everything. the peasants. No, but my point is, like, let's lessen the avocado toast group by training our children, by helping them to become adults, but like at the appropriate time in their late teens, you know, not when they finally leave the house. So that, I guess that's an aside, but for the folks that are, you know, somewhat competent and, you know, how do you do it? How do you do it? Right. I mean, number one, I asked you before the show, Brent, like, why don't you live in Toronto?
Yeah.
Right.
I can't afford it. I don't really want to, but
yeah. And now you didn't grow up there. You grew up around here. Yeah, so
but I did have a job in Toronto because it was a good paying job. And
yeah.
You used to live in Toronto.
I lived in Toronto for 1 year.
Yeah.
But.
And you didn't anymore. Yeah. But I mean, but there's your answer, right? You can't afford it.
Yeah.
Right? I couldn't afford to live in Toronto right now. Like, I don't think any of us could.
I can't even afford to live in Hamilton. I live in half a house in Hamilton.
Right? But so there's... I mean, there's part of the answer. We should actually get to the question at some point.
Yeah, maybe. Well, but, to dovetail with that is, like, why did the people come here from Holland? Like,
yeah.
Or immigrate? Like, why do people come here in the first place going back when they immigrated, right?
Yeah, because there were no opportunities in Holland,
they couldn't
right?
afford it there.
They couldn't afford it. So, I mean, there's one answer, right? Just because you grew up, I don't know, maybe you grew up in Burlington or even Hamilton for that matter, right? Does that mean you have to live there?
Yeah.
Right? If you can't afford it, you can't afford it. So don't have the expectations maybe of your parents. Because I think the sort of the boomers were a bit of an anomaly, yeah. right? Where they grew up generally with low interest rates, the 80s notwithstanding, and general affordability, where there were structures already in place, right? The previous generation kind of had to build those structures. They came with nothing. It wasn't affordable.
They built all the opportunities for them.
Yeah. You know, they had like a knife in their teeth and, you know, battling off bears in one hand and building a house in the other.
Yeah.
Right? They did it somehow. And it wasn't great living situations, but they got through it and they did
that,
it.
That puts hardship into context, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you think you're going through hardship now as a young person. Try not have a toilet in your house. And, you know.
Uphill both ways and all this stuff. In the cold, walking to school.
Yeah, so I mean, we have had an era of unprecedented prosperity.
Yeah.
For the past, you know, 100 years, you could say 50 years. I mean, we know 1971, it really started falling apart when we went off the gold standard, but we haven't felt those effects until now, really. And yeah, the last few years, it's gotten worse and worse. And I'm not saying it's not hard, but I'm also saying it's not impossible, I don't think, because we do see young people that are able to buy homes and have families and do this. We're not saying it's not hard. Absolutely not. We're not saying maybe it's harder than for a previous generation. Yeah, I could buy that too.
Yeah.
But I mean, at the end of the day,
and it's not a surprise, right? Like we talk about on the show, the reasons why it's getting harder, right? Because we're seeing this the same way, and we're all dealing. Like we all live in the same culture, same society, same monetary system, right? And we're all feeling the effects in different ways of inflation, and that's why we kind of started the show in the first place, is to kind of bring this into the spotlight a little bit, say why is this happening. But now that we've kind of delved into it a bit, it is something that we expect, right? It's not a surprise that it's actually very difficult to afford stuff. It's like that's actually what you expect in a monetary system, that they can just print money, right? If it was the other way around, you'd be like, okay, why is this happening, right?
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, and so one of our longer term solutions, which doesn't help anybody right now, but is
beating around the bush.
Agitated. The reason we talk about real estate, the reason we talk about Bitcoin, is to have, I mean, Bitcoin specifically, to have an honest monetary system.
Yeah.
And then the way to kind of deal with the lousy system we have now is real estate, right? As an investment, but also like as your own personal property.
Yeah.
Do you want to summarize
the
question?
Oh man. So
just like the high highlights.
Yeah, so I think he's calling us out for not addressing the issue straight on, that it is difficult for young people and we don't go into the numbers. So the numbers are, you know, if I want to buy a house for 500 grand, you know, maybe even that's kind of a cheap house, I need to save $32,000 roughly to close on the house. That's 5% down.
Yeah.
Right? It's a first-time home buyer, 5% interest rate. The monthly expenses are like $3,500. So that's your mortgage, utilities, property tax, insurance.
Yeah.
So you got to save $32,000. Then you have to pay $3,500 a month to live it. And, you know, we're talking to a Christian audience and, you know, we keep harping on, you know, we should have kids, right? Well, yeah, let's say the person wants to have kids and they want to raise a family.
I saw some herps the other day, actually. Yeah. It was really cool. It was an open house in Open Doors in Hamilton, right? Akmar, that old estate. And they had like harpists in there. The kids loved it. Anyways, I don't know. I think.
What were they harping on?
The kids? Harps.
Oh.
No, they're playing. Okay. The harpists. We should have more harps. Sorry.
In any case.
So his point is, you're saying all these things, they all sound good to me, but they don't seem to line up. Like, you can't get married young, have kids, move out of your parents' house, buy a house, have one person working. Like, you can't do all these things at once.
That's so, the ideal kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, as Dwight Schrute would say, false. So, do you want to just hit a few more of the number, the highlights of the numbers?
Yeah, because the numbers, if you do have kids, the idea is that you go through Christian education. That has a cost as well, yeah, right? So, if you kind of add it all up, you're at $3,500 for your housing costs. Then you're at, let's say, I think they put it at $2,000 a month for Christian education, which is a little bit of a stretch because it's assuming you jump right from being a young person right into high school.
Yeah.
And elementary school. But then you have your other expenses. So he adds it up to like $6,500 a month for your like household expenditures.
Pretty conservative.
Yeah, which is conservative. Like, yeah, you're living in a $500,000 house.
Yeah.
But if you have an average job or like a decent job making $30 an hour, 50 hours a week, that's 78 grand a year. Like, after tax, $56,000 of income, and you need to pay, that's $4,700 per month. So not even close to 6,500.
Yeah.
Right. So where's that extra,
where's the extra come from?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then you have to work more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which isn't great for family life, et cetera, et cetera.
So what were you saying, Gid? Like, basically,
you can't have all these things.
You can't have
the balance. Do I have like me and my wife both working, or do like we want to have kids right away? So should we put that off and just try to grind it out and work and rent cheap and then try to get ahead with the house? And then if we do have kids, we want to help them out financially too. So we want to be even further ahead. And it just doesn't seem to add up for young people, right?
Yeah. So, who wants to take a crack? You want to take a crack?
That'll be the end of the podcast. We don't know.
Yeah. I'll be the first to admit we don't have all the answers.
No, we don't. We have some, proposed solutions. How about that? Maybe not the answer. So, okay, let's start with the house first off. I mean, let's go.
Start even with the mindset.
Go back a little further.
Why are we even getting a house? Like, I think a lot of young people who are getting married young, just assume, hey, I'm going to be where my parents are when they were like 35 or whatever.
Yeah.
Even like, I want to be there now. Like, I want to own a little house, have kids and live there by myself. And that's just not feasible anymore.
Well, I think that, so part of the problem is expectations, right? You grew up in maybe a nice house. Like, you weren't there when your parents first got married and lived in some crummy apartment or some crummy house or whatever. And maybe this is their second or their third house. And they've, you talked about how, your dad worked for 40 years on the place.
Yeah. Fixing it up.
It wasn't great to begin with. It's nice now. But you let's say you leave that home. Well, you're used to, you're accustomed to that lifestyle.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Nope.
Yeah.
You're not going to have that same lifestyle. So get that out. And I'm not saying that's what the person is saying.
Yeah.
But for some people have that idea, right? Like, they want the granite countertops and that's why they want to live in your ADU, because it's really nice. It's super fancy. Nice. And it's like, that's not reasonable, folks. But going back further. Okay. If you're, let's say you're dating. So part of courtship is you kind of talk about things and make sure your values are aligned. And like, A, do we want to have children, right?
Yeah.
That's sometimes like, do we want to have kids?
Yeah. Because I asked these people who came outright, I was like, well, what have you guys thought about having kids? And then she's just like, to her boyfriend, hey, do we want to have kids?
This is the first time I've even thought I was a kid. Oh.
I am a kid.
Right? So you need to talk about that. You need to talk, okay, like, are we in agreement? We're going to have children. Okay. And then how are we going to plan? So here's the thing. I don't know. Sometimes, I'm complimentary in my viewpoints. That doesn't mean I pay a lot of compliments, because I don't.
Right.
But it's essentially the idea of male headship, right? Especially in marriage. And, that's not always popular, but like, whatever.
It's biblical.
Yeah, it's biblical. So the question, if you have that kind of mindset, is, what is the role of the woman? What is the role of the wife? And should she bother to get an education if she's just going to be raising the kids? Right. And even just that question, there's all kinds of, she's just going to be raising the, like, there's all kinds of problems with that. No, but this is what people say.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, think, how are you, what are you asking? Right. So my, you know, my viewpoint is, yeah, if you're a woman and you're intelligent, like, yeah, go pursue post-secondary education, whatever, get on the steps to a career. And then if it so happens that you have children and you're at home with them, well, you're even more, you're better positioned to raise and teach those children than if you didn't have that education. And, you know, not everybody's going to go down that path.
You don't think all women should go into the trades like all men do?
No, I don't. There's a reason that men do trades and that men are garbage collectors and, like...
military.
Yeah, all this egalitarian, like, we need more women in the trades. Like, no, if they don't, if they're not suited for it, like, if they're suited, fine. But if they're not, we don't need to push them into it unnecessarily.
Yeah.
Right? You get me. You're just poking the bear, man. But
do we even answer anything yet? Like,
no.
But we're laying the foundations. Okay,
right,
maybe it's a slab on grade. Maybe it's not a deep foundation. Yeah. But the point is, you have to discuss all this stuff before you get married and kind of plan it out. And you don't know what God has in plan for you.
Yeah.
Maybe there are no kids in the picture.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe there's lots, right? But you kind of plan it out. As best you can. And I don't know where I was going with that, but the point is, you got to talk about it.
Yeah. So you're mindful of, you go into it with eyes open and shared perspective as husband and wife, but assuming they did that, right?
Yep, for sure. But then presumably you've got some time before you're married. Let's say you're dating and maybe you're going to have kids right away. But you have some time to work and to save up money with two incomes.
While you live at home or...
Yeah, maybe you're... Yeah, I mean, can
with
you...
With a bunch of friends in a cheap house.
Yeah. If you can live at home, I know we don't do that anymore. You get married, you move out. Maybe you live in your parents' basement for a while. Like, I think we need to also discard this idea a little bit of the nuclear family where it's mom and dad and kids. And as soon as kids are 20 or whatever, they move out and they're gone. Right?
Yeah.
That's not how it's been for, that's since the 50s. Yeah, that was sort of the model, but not for all of human history. We live together as clans, as communities.
Yeah.
And I don't
rely on others more.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with living at home as long as you're contributing to the household and you know, not being a mooch.
Right. But this is a huge step. So, like, from being a teenager and not having as much responsibility, maybe, and like you don't have to pay for as many things, and then say you get married young and you move out, then life kind of kicks you in the butt and you realize, like, I gotta pay a lot of money for everything.
Yeah,
that's a big eye-opener. And then you start thinking, like, if I do want to own a house of my own, I gotta do what I'm doing now and more to get ahead.
Yep.
And that kicks you in the butt a bit. So it's this idea of slowly maturing and growing up while you're at home still and becoming an adult and taking on responsibility.
Yeah, and not everybody, like, you know, parents should prepare their kids, but not every kid gets it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just need to be kicked in the teeth by life to really understand, like, oh, that's what Dad was talking about, right? but anyways, so we're talking about buying a house that's worth $500,000.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not realistic. Maybe you can't afford that, and maybe you should look somewhere else. And I know people who've done that, and, like, yeah, you want to still live in this town because of whatever, but... I mean, humans have been doing that forever.
Yeah.
Like, go west, young man, right? Go where it's affordable. Like,
yeah, go where the opportunity is.
But let's say, okay, you got to save up $32,000. Is that reasonable for a young couple to do? You know, start saving before you get married?
Well, let's look at that for a second, because practically, what are the obstacles in a young person's way, right? So I look at it like the first thing is probably qualifying for a mortgage. So can a young person or a young couple qualify? And to qualify for something, you need to have income, right?
Yep.
Increased. You have to have your debts decreased. You have to build your credit score and you have to pass a stress test. So, like, you can almost just take this whole problem, boil it down to like a few buckets and just say, well, we need to increase our income. How do we do that?
Yeah.
Right? We need to decrease our debts. Okay, well, do we own a car on payments? Like, that was kind of probably foolish if we want to buy a house.
Yeah.
But you can do the car purchase for sure, but you're trading off your house, right? Mm-hmm. So like you can get into student debt, but when it comes to buying a house, now you got student debt and that's going to be a hit against you, right? Your credit score, right? Like all of these things, if you actually want to pursue owning a house, there's some practical steps that you can take, right? And then maybe the solution is, well, yeah, Brent, you know, I've increased my income. I don't have any debts. Like I paid off all my student stuff. I have no car payments. You know, my credit score is great. I just can't qualify because I can't pass the stress test at these rates. It's just going to be ridiculous, right? And that's what we're talking about in this podcast, is that access to debt, to credit, right, is essentially an asset, right?
Yeah.
So it's available and it's actually a really valuable thing. And that's what I say to all the clients that come in here. They're like, oh, I don't want to get in more debt. It's like, well, actually, you know, all these young people over here, they're trying to get into debt. They can't, right?
Yeah.
The fact that you can and the bank is like, yeah, well, we'll give you $1 million loan for sure, right?
Yeah.
Like that's actually huge. Mm-hmm. So there's a bit of a disconnect between the previous generation that kind of had everything figured out, and that like, or they stood on the shoulders of the immigrants who came here and they had opportunities and they built up this wealth. And now they're saying, I don't like debt. I pay it off, pay it off, pay it off. And then the young people are like, I just need a house, which means I need to get into debt on this asset and I can't get in while the parents have all the equity, right? So I think the solution there in a simple terms is like get a co-signer or somebody to help you qualify for the loan. Cause that's the first step. Once you can qualify, that's like that first box checked, and then you can move on to the next thing, right?
Well, and
I think there's very often someone in your life who can help you qualify, or if you join forces with them, you can get.
Yeah, that's another option too. Like maybe you don't have someone in your life who can co-sign, who has the access to debt, but you can maybe partner up with a friend who also is looking to get and has an income, and maybe their spouse has an income. And then
That's a huge advantage for married couples, right? Because you have two incomes right away. Like,
Well, and that's where the planning really comes in, right? If you're going to do this, do it while you have two incomes.
Yeah.
Because afterwards, like,
you start having kids and...
Yeah. If, let's say the wife stays at home, the husband...
Yeah. Or you have a business, you start a business. Now all of a sudden you got, you know, a few years where you can't qualify.
Yeah.
Because you don't have
sometimes more than a few.
Yeah. Depending on how successful the business is.
But once, once you've qualified, once you have that mortgage, almost never will the bank make you re-qualify unless you're trying to refinance or sometimes moving your mortgage, right?
Yeah.
But once you have
get it,
you're good.
Yeah.
As long as you can pay the pay the bills, right? So that's planning.
Get the house, and then if you ever refinance, maybe you're in a different position in life where you can like take over, and the person doesn't have to be on title anymore, and you can own it.
Well, I think we're trying to solve that first thing, like you said, just to get in. Like, okay,
I think this is the biggest part of the problem.
Well, I thought of a couple other problems that maybe are not as big, but the second one would be like saving the down payment, because everyone talks about like, I go to work, you know, I make this much money and we save, but we're never going to be able to save enough to keep up with the house prices as they kind of rise. Right. So that's kind of the next step. Like if you can qualify for the loan, that's great. But if you don't have the cash, like what are we going to do? Right.
Yeah. No, sorry. What I meant was the biggest thing is getting that house.
Right.
All the stuff afterwards.
That's what we're talking about.
No, because then the question is like, how do you actually afford to live once you have it?
Yeah.
I think you figure that out after.
That's
getting the down payment.
So getting the down payment.
Two young people working. Presumably if you're working and you've got a few years where you can save from two incomes, right? Before children are in the picture, let's say from dating and you know, maybe you're not, you don't start dating and you're like, okay, let's start saving money for a house.
How much you got?
Yeah.
First date.
But the point is there's some time. And I think you, even if you had kids immediately after getting married, there's still 9 months.
Well, the difficulty here is that time is good to save, but it's also going to be a bit of a double-edged sword because the house prices are going to continue to climb, right? And this is what I think the crux of the complaints that young people are like, well, you know, it's one thing to qualify because it's basically either you do or you don't, right?
Yeah.
And the interest rates, like everybody's facing the exact same problem. Like I can't qualify, right? So you know, it's no surprise if you can't qualify because the rates are high. Well, you know, saving is the hard part, right? Because you feel at a disadvantage because I'm relying on my income, but the house price is going up.
Yeah, maybe that's even another group of young people where they know what they got to do, but even
they can't.
Like they're trying and they can't.
Yeah. Well, and I'm not saying this, everybody can follow the sort of blueprint that we lay out and they'll be fine. Because let's say, I don't know, that like there are people who just aren't really talented. Let's say you're not particularly handy, so you can't, you're not going to go into a trade where you're making $30 an hour, like our example. Or let's say you're not on track to be a lawyer or a doctor or whatever, right? You're doing something else where you're just not making as much money.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you have to sort of face reality. And how much can you save? Can you afford a house in the city that you're in right now?
Yeah.
And if you look at it, honestly, you're like, okay, I can save some money every month, but not enough to buy a $500,000 house. Like, okay, you can't do that. You got to go somewhere else where you can.
How much can you afford and where?
Yeah. And honestly, look at that. Like,
you can afford it? Okay. That's a step. Yeah. We go from there. Can you move to northern Manitoba, maybe? Okay.
And you save on auto insurance because you can just ride a polar bear around. Yeah.
Well, this is, again, where just like qualifying for a mortgage, saving the down payment is an opportunity to joint venture with somebody, like join forces, or beg, borrow, or steal.
I mean, do we want to
we don't want to say that. But basically, get creative with where you can get funds, because if your goal is to own a house and you know that you cannot outpace the house price increasing by saving, and that's never going to work, then maybe it makes more sense to talk to someone you know who has the money and say, look, this is what I'm thinking. I have a family and I want to get a house, and I'm ready to go. Like, I'm waiting here with all my tools to fix this thing up. You know, we're going to move in. We're going to just, and, you know, I have a job. I can pay for this loan. So you give me $20,000, $30,000 or whatever extra you need to get the house in the first place, and I'll pay that back over the next 5 years. Like, I'm sure if you had confidence that that's what you wanted to pursue, you could find someone in your life who'd be willing to give you that loan, right? Because there's so many people out there who have the wealth and who want to see young people do well and thrive.
Right.
Yeah. And are super excited about that.
Yeah, you know what you want and how bad you want it and why.
And you can articulate that.
Yeah, and you can articulate it to someone.
So if that's your plan, please email Brent at goodstewards.ca and he'll hook you up with someone.
Yeah. Well, no, that's true. In a way, it's a joke, but
you need to be creative.
And like, there are people looking to help people in practical ways. And I hear about this all the time, right? Like, just, you know, help them out, get a house, and, you know, they're all
set. Well, and maybe it's a business thing too. Like, they take an equity stake in the home.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we have, like, the government has that asinine program too, where they'll contribute some and then they own part of the home.
I was going to mention the government programs, and I just don't want to go down that rabbit hole.
I don't either, but like, well, let's just say it's an option. Yeah. Look into them.
Do you want Justin to own part of your house?
First time home buyers with the down payment. They're trying to make it easier, which is, I guess, somewhat.
We just call it joint venturing with Justin. So we just helped a client through Good Stewards to buy their first house, and their parents, so they had half of the money and their parents had the other half, and they put 20% down on a house, and the parents own a percentage and the kids own a percentage. The kids are going to live there, and their other unit in the house they're going to rent, and there's future development potential on the lot. So they're like, this is a good long-term investment for everybody involved. They have an agreement in place that, you know, you put in this, you get this much out after this much time, and you just lay out all the terms. But now the people who want to live in a house are not paying rent anymore.
Yeah.
They're paying money towards their own equity. And the parents have lots of money sitting on the side, and now it's in action, earning a return, right?
Right. So this is huge, actually. So now you can't afford to just own a house to live in as a home. It also needs to be an investment, right?
It needs to be an income source.
Either income or potential income, or like potential development, maybe a backyard suite or something on the property.
I think that's pretty critical. Yeah, which we haven't really talked about.
Necessary for young
people. Yeah, I would say as much as possible.
You might not be able to live in a house by yourself.
Yeah.
You need other people helping you pay for it.
And that was like my next thing that I had on this list. Of like the first thing is qualifying for a mortgage. The second thing is saving a down payment. The next thing is finding a house that actually makes sense or works. Mm. Right? Like you're not just going to buy anything.
Well, that's
because like you keep saying you can't make the payments. Then what's the point of getting a house in the first
place? Yeah. Can't actually keep it.
Yeah. So yeah, part of the qualifying could be this house. We're going a little further down the road now, but this house has a basement apartment.
Yeah.
And so we can use some of the potential rent towards qualifying, which banks will do.
Yeah.
So that's us. And that's a very good point, Gid. I think it is pretty essential for most young people, unless you get a good deal or whatever, is you need to find a house with income potential to help you pay that mortgage. And
which is a big mindset shift, obviously. Like, you're not going to be able to live in there by yourself. But, and that's okay. Like,
it is and it isn't. I mean, I think a lot of people have been. I don't know. I think a lot of people have been doing that.
I think for myself, like, we've been married almost, 9 years? And we've never lived in a house by ourselves. We've always lived in a multi-unit building. Even the house that we own now, we have tenants. And like, I don't think we could afford to just buy the house we're in now and live in it ourselves without income, right?
Yeah, like we ran an Airbnb in our basement.
I mean, I'm
half your
age, but I'm older than Gideon.
I remember Methuselah had a basement apartment, and it worked out for him pretty well.
Yeah. What is 1,000 years collecting rent at $800 a month?
Much longer amortization terms back then.
Yeah.
No, but we also had a basement apartment. That was a stipulation when we bought a house. Like, it has to have a. I don't care about anything else.
$9.6 million he would have made.
Wow.
Yeah.
Drachmas.
Yeah, drachmas.
But anyways, and so for me, being on the Airbnb, like the short-term rental kind of thing, right, that market is getting a lot and a lot harder to get into, to be in as an investor. But where there's a ton of opportunity, because of all the restrictions on short-term rentals in most cities, the opportunity is for people who have, like for owner-occupiers. So if you have a basement apartment or you can live in the basement and rent out the top, like it's perfect because most of the restrictions say you can only Airbnb if it's your principal residence.
Yeah.
So in Hamilton, for example, right, that's the rule. So what it does essentially is it kind of crowds out a lot of the competition. A lot of the investors that I know have either switched their model or just sold the home because, well, we can't do Airbnb anymore, short-term rentals.
Yeah.
So I happen to know other young couples who are doing very well. They got basement apartments and maybe it's like a 1-bedroom or 2-bedroom. And that's actually a pretty sweet spot for Airbnb. I'm just doing a whole sales pitch for Joy Hill right now.
It's just an interesting perspective, right? Cause you're in that industry. So you see the numbers.
Yeah. So you have less competition now. 1 or 2 bedrooms are generally in an urban setting. 1-bedroom for sure are always busy. There's always demand throughout the year. You still have cycles, but there's always demand for those. So like that's a tremendous opportunity. And I talk to people sometimes where they're like, oh, would you manage it? I'm like, no, you manage it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'll do it. But like, come on.
Well, that's what we do with our clients as well. People are like, you know, we help them find a property, get it all set up. We'll find you tenants, but you manage it because you're the owner. And we want you to be responsible for it and learn because it's a great skill to have, right? And it's just an added cost to pay on the monthly cash flow if you're going to pay us to manage it too. Like, it's kind of silly, right?
Yeah.
Not saying we won't do it, but it's just like take responsibility for your asset and, you know, enjoy that opportunity as well, right? So a lot of people would love to have it. But like kind of all these things don't really make sense unless... Like, we're basically just telling people way to get into debt, right? So if, like, it doesn't make any sense if all you're doing is a young person and you're just getting into a massive amount of debt, right?
Yeah.
So you need to be buying a house that's not just a big liability. And this is like almost going back to our series about Robert Kiyosaki's book. Like, assets and liabilities. Like, what defines an asset and liability? Well, an asset is something that puts money in your pocket every month, and a liability is something that takes it out. Well,
right. So the difference there is you're living there by yourself. It's a liability, right? It's taking money out of your pocket. If you have someone living there, it's also putting money in your pocket.
Yeah. Part of it becomes an asset.
You're lessening the liability.
Right. Yeah. And like you hear people say, you know, I'm just working for the bank, or, you know, I'm on this treadmill and like, you know, just constantly making these payments, or I'm house poor, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be house poor. And that was a comment that these people made the other day when they came to see our rental unit. And they, one of the reasons why they didn't want to take this opportunity to buy a house in Burlington was because they don't want to be house poor. Right. And I don't know if people fully understand what house poor means, or
it just means you can't buy as much avocado toast. Let's be honest. Right.
All of my money is tied up in this amazing house.
Yeah. Oh no.
But
poor
I can't
you.
Use it for anything.
Yeah.
So, I'm so rich that I'm poor.
Then you'd rather be rent poor, like just send money to someone else.
So, no, actually poor.
I want to say one thing. Actually, I mean, I want to say a lot more than one.
You
thing.
You want to say one no, thing, but you will say point. Many things. Okay.
I think at some point, houses will truly be unattainable for young couples unless they're gifted to them.
Yeah.
Right. I still think there's opportunity now, but I want to acknowledge that. Like, yeah, at some point. It's just not that gap between the wage income and house prices is going to be too far. And this is why I would really like say, get in now while you can, because at some point it's going to be out of reach and you're going to be, I don't know, well, whatever. But the other thing too, we have accelerating, I know it wasn't just one thing, accelerating inflation, right?
Yeah.
Or at least it's not getting any better. Once you have that home that works in your benefit, right? If you don't have a home, it's going to kill you because you're saving money and it's more and more out of reach. But you talk about this massive debt, right? Well, that massive debt is going to get eaten away by inflation, even if you do nothing else over the years.
Even if you don't pay it off, like you just pay interest on it.
Yeah. Yeah. That $500,000 in 10 years or in 20 years is going to be like nothing.
Like, right? It's like people buying a house.
Because wages will eventually go up. Yeah. Maybe not the same pace, but it will work in your favor. So that's the one or two things I just wanted to say. But okay, so are we at the point where hopefully by now people have a plan to actually buy that house and they're in the house?
I don't think so. I think they're still shopping because...
Shopping. Oh, yes.
Yeah,
right.
So you're trying to find a house that makes sense.
Yeah.
You want to avoid it being a big liability.
Because you can buy the wrong place.
So I like to...
What makes sense? Like, what does that look like?
Well, like you want it to not drown you financially. Right. And...
So don't push the purchase price way out of your... Just because you have a cosigner doesn't mean you can buy a house for $1 million.
Exactly.
In your gut.
But you also don't want to necessarily buy something that is just, you know... needs all this work and you're not qualified to do the work, and it's just going to basically be a money pit or a drain on.
Yeah.
So we commend you for making it through a good portion of the show, putting up with poor audio quality. From this point, it doesn't get better. Give us a 5-star rating so we can afford new mics. Or if you share with a friend, we might even be able to find a studio that's not right beside a bunch of landscapers. Thank you. That's where I think expertise or experience kind of comes into play.
Yeah. And we're not talking about your realtor.
No.
No offense to the realtors out there. But no, rely on someone who is selling a product to tell you how good that product is.
Yeah. So think about like an example of, let's say, shopping for a car, right? So when you're looking for a car, maybe the first thing you do is like you set forth this criteria, right? It's like, I want this car. Like, what are you looking for? How much can you afford?
I want to rent out the back seat.
Yeah. Well, that's the parameters that you're looking with, right? So you just kind of say, well, I need something. Then you kind of research what kind of brands or models you want to actually buy and which ones are going to have like the features and benefits that you actually need, right? Maybe you have some wants and needs. So you're kind of like trying to balance these all out, right, in your head. And so those brands or models that you're looking at, those are your options. So you have your parameters, you have your options, and now you're going out into the marketplace to investigate like, okay, what can we do here, right? So then maybe you're weighing the option of like buying new, leasing, buying used, right? And if you're somebody who's like handy with cars and you can fix them, like you might lean towards buying used, and you're going to be looking at the market every day and you're going to say, I'm looking for, let's say, a Honda Civic between the year of like, you know, 2005 and 2008. And it's like a certain model. And that's what, like, that fits the criteria I'm looking for. And I know that I know how to fix those cars. Mm-hmm. And that just aligns with exactly what I want, right? And then...
And you can put those big, loud, annoying exhausts on it. Yeah. That don't do anything for
those are avocado toast people.
Okay.
So... Yeah. It's, look, I'm eating my toast! Yeah. So, but what do you do? Do you buy the first car you see? No. You probably spend some time in the market, you go see 5 or 10 cars, and you know by the time you've seen 10 cars... Like, you know what you're looking for, right?
Yeah.
And you know what adds value, right? Because you're like, hey, I saw that car and it was priced more, but it had less kilometers. And you know all the variables, right? Like, this one has whatever, good shape. It's not rusty.
You know how much they're selling for.
Like, yeah. So now you're essentially in the market, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you were asked that same person like a year ago, what, like, would you buy this car? They'd be like, I don't know. But like, now you know, and you could give any car that's a Honda Civic in that year a price, right? Because you know, yeah, boom, that car comes up, that's worth this much to me, right? Well, now you're getting some expertise, right? And now you're prepared. So you're like, if an opportunity comes up, you know what you're looking for and you're ready to take action. So now you're in a position to actually like benefit, right? So you're going to buy something that like, oh, I got a sweet deal on this car because it's $1,000 off, but I know I could spend $50 and make it worth $2,000 more.
Yeah.
Right. But that requires time, that requires expertise, right? So that's a similar, it's just kind of like a little glimpse, right? At like,
did you read that somewhere? You didn't come up with that.
I come up with this because I'm thinking about how to how to relate this to buying a house, right? So it's very similar, right?
And
right?
You don't necessarily need to buy a used car to fix it up. Like, maybe you don't have this expertise, you can still.
So for somebody, let's say in their 40s, right? Yeah. You know, they've got 5 kids, they're a business owner, they're going to buy a car. Their experience might be way different than a young person, right? So they're not looking for making $1,000. They need a car tomorrow to drive their family around. They don't want any, they don't want any downtime. Yeah. They don't want to fix this thing. They just want to pay. So they're looking at it from a totally different context, right? So they're going to be shopping for houses in a different way, So a house is like that sort of a product, right? Or like that sort of commodity. Like, it's just a bunch of sticks and 2x4s or like whatever on a piece of land, right?
Yeah.
Well, what gives it value and what is an opportunity to you? Well, if you're getting into the market for the first time and you're just a young person and what you have to bring to the table is maybe not money, but it's time. Maybe it's expertise. Maybe it's like a gang of gung-ho friends with a whole bunch of tools on the weekend who can just like, you know, tear this thing apart and make it awesome, right? Maybe it's like, you know, you know what Pinterest up to, maybe talking to the woman, right? Like, you know exactly what will add value because you look at Pinterest all the time and you're like, dude, this is a sweet bathroom. If we could find a way to make that cheap in this house, right? So it's just a mindset that
That takes time too. Like,
you're it takes time
into the market, know exactly what you're looking for. You gotta think decent.
Drive the neighborhoods that you want to actually look at, right? And see like, oh, is that house, like, would that go for that? And then you look at it a month later when it's sold and you're like, wow, man, that sold for that. I wonder what they're gonna do to it. And then you look at it a year later, like, all these things take time, right? So either you can put in that time or you pay someone else. And that's the way it always works, right? It's like, you put in the time and effort or you pay someone else to do it. And they do it way faster and maybe they do it better, but you pay for it, right?
And so number one, a house is a much bigger purchase than a car.
Yeah.
So you should be doing that much more research and work. Number two, all that information is available. So this is something I wanted to talk about as well. Is, you know, some financial opportunities are limited for younger folks. But in another way, there's so many more opportunities to make money.
Yeah.
And I mentioned outside it before, of real right? estate. People like, I don't know, flipping couches. This is a silly example. But like kids buying and selling sneakers. All this stuff that you would never think of. There's so many opportunities. There's so much more information and opportunities with the internet. that was in air quotes for those listening, to make money in your spare time. And you talked about time as well. Like when you're young, listen, I don't care. I'm going to throw my pen down here. Okay. If you are 20 or 25, don't tell me you have no time for doing whatever. Because you know what? Just wait till you're older and
you've got
more kids. You're on committees. You have a business maybe. You got this and that. Yeah. And you're like, you're busy all the time. But you learn how to manage it and how to juggle it. But I always see young people like, oh, I'm so busy and I'm so stressed. And it's like, you know, like, oh.
Those are the people with the avocado toast, I think.
No, I think in general, you don't really, like, until you build up to that, you don't know what busy is.
Right.
And, like, that's, I'm just saying, you probably got more time than you think if you're a young person. Yeah. And if you disagree, like, let's come here and let's fight
about it. So they call them dinks, right? Double income, no kids?
Yeah. anyway, so that was just a little rant on on the time thing. But yeah, there's just in terms of working and making money, like don't always think linearly, like you have to get a job and make X amount of money and that's it, right? Like maybe you got to hustle after your job too. And like, yeah, that sucks. Right. I feel really bad for you. Not. Sorry, that was a 90s joke.
As well, like your biggest asset is yourself and spending your free time learning about what kind of house you want to buy and why. And how that's going to move you forward in life. That's huge. Like why not educate yourself in your spare time instead of
instead of scrolling Facebook, scroll market MLS.
Yeah.
Or realtor.ca or whatever,
gain,
right?
Gain knowledge.
House Sigma. Yeah. There's lots of ways to do it.
Yeah.
And then maybe that's a usable skill down the road too, right?
Yeah. But there are people too who, like, if I'm shopping for a used car, I would not know how to fix it or what. Like, so I wouldn't be able to spot an opportunity.
Yeah.
So that is different for everyone too. Like, because houses, for some people, it's just like, oh, I love, like, I know everything about houses and I could easily build a house.
Yeah.
Right. But for many people, it's kind of this big black box that's intimidating. Right. So maybe it does make sense to like talk to your parents or talk to somebody who's older than you.
Instead of spending your time educating yourself, you spend your time networking with people who have an education on it.
But I think there's a baseline.
There's a baseline.
You can look at
relationships. Like I'm saying, invest your time. If you're not good at it by nature, just invest time in relationships with people who are. And build, you can build it faster, right?
Sure.
You can leverage your time a lot.
Okay, but let me say this. When you're young, your time's not worth as much. Like, just, you know, sorry young people.
Controversial mark.
People under the bus.
Sorry, we have to have clickbait on this podcast, and that's what we're going. We're just going to put that out there.
Time is worthless.
It's not worth less, but it's worth less. That's why punctuation and grammar matters. No, but it's true, right? You haven't had time to build up expertise in most, you know, maybe playing an instrument or something, but in most areas. So if it takes you longer to do something, like, oh, well. Mm. And so I'm thinking specifically of like fixing stuff around the house, for example, right? Especially if it's your own house, like, yeah, just learn in your house. And if it takes you five times as long to put up some drywall or to fix some plumbing, than it would for a pro, like, whatever. It's your time. Mm-hmm. You've just learned something. You can do it again and again to get better, which is how the pros got there in the first place.
Yeah.
And maybe you never get to that level of proficiency, but who cares, right?
Yeah.
It's your time. You can do it. And, you know, you can only work so much, I think. So if you've got the time, then why not putter around the house and try and fix stuff? I don't know. That's my view.
It's my view. We're saying spend your time gaining knowledge on the market, looking for opportunities where you can add value and like add value to a house or different opportunities where you can add maybe a basement unit or a house that has a basement unit, maybe different kinds of opportunities in that sense.
And engage. So I just, you know, I'll just go against myself here, but engage some experts too. Right. I was just like, you got to do it all yourself. You don't have to do it all yourself, but at least the more you know, the more you can gauge your answers from experts as well. Right. Like, yeah, absolutely. If you have relatives who are in the housing market somehow, Like, yeah, pick their brains and see what they think.
Stand on their shoulders. I think to kind of answer your question, what have we kind of answered? Well, we've identified the obstacles that need to be overcome, like qualifying for a mortgage, saving a down payment, finding a house that works. And like, I think maybe the solution around qualifying for a mortgage is, you know, get a cosigner.
Have two incomes.
Right? Have a plan when you go to someone and say, this is how I'm going to make it work.
Yeah, these things all dovetail together, right? Like if you go to somebody with a house that makes sense and you're like, I'm going to do this to this house and I'm going to live in it and I'm super excited.
This is what I'm going to end up with in 5 years.
Yeah.
I'm going to spend all my free time.
Would you help me qualify for a loan? Sure, right? Like if the person, can trust you and has a relationship, that's a huge way to kind of skip into the market right away, right?
So don't be useless. That's another one.
Sorry, we got to talk about we got to talk about shopping for buses so we can throw people under them.
No, but I mean, just be a responsible person.
Yeah,
I think is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So that if you do talk to somebody, they're like, oh, you? No.
Yeah, and then the other thing, saving a down payment, well, maybe it makes sense to fast track that by borrowing the money. And I don't want to be like labeled as, oh, Brent just says like, go get in debt, right? Because that's the other side of the equation is don't just go get into debt willy-nilly.
Yeah.
Do it properly on the right house. And that's the last step, right? Is find the house that actually works and then put the plan in place to do it.
Yeah, because you could do all this stuff and then buy the wrong house.
Yeah, and that's where I think people would say, well, I can't buy a house. They all don't work. It's like, well, everybody's facing that same thing. Like we're facing that. Investors that come to us are facing that, right? Like does the house cash flow? No, not like it did 4 years ago, not like it did 10 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So maybe you need more capital and more grit to get it done, but there's still opportunities, right? They're just different. It's like buying a newer car. Yeah. Like the newer cars don't cost what the old cars did and they cost way more to fix, but there's still opportunities. It might just be a little bit less, right? But we're not going back to when the old cars were like, you just buy them, you pop the transmission out, you put a new one in, right? Like now it's way more complex, right?
Yeah.
So look at it like that, right? Everybody's in the same boat. It's not just young people facing this market. It's everybody facing this market, right? So even if an older person wants to get a house, they still won't cash flow the same. Like, it's not like they're cash flowing way more, right?
Yeah.
Unless you have cash and you can just put it down. But that's a different story, right?
Yeah.
So if somebody's just trying to borrow the money and buy the same house, they're going to have the same numbers as you are, right?
Yeah.
And that's where houses become, not just like a family home you're going to live in. Like, they're becoming purpose-built rental houses. You can't subdivide a house. If let's say the house is worth $1 million, you can't subdivide it into like $200,000 houses.
No,
right? Not yet, anyways. Like condominiumize a house, and then the young person can buy a $200,000 house in a lot. Like, no, you're buying, like you're still buying this big 50 by 100 lot with a house on it.
But yeah.
To make that make sense, you need more resources and capital. That's just the reality, right? You need more money, you need more qualifying power, and you need more expertise because you got to put in all these units to generate the income. Yeah. And that's the reality of where we are. Like you can't, maybe you can move to Northwest Territories or Fort Erie or like Buffalo or what, like, right? Yeah. At where the house price, but your lifestyle is going to change.
Yeah.
It's the same, right? Your income's going to go down or maybe this is an opportunity, right? You can get an online job that has the same income and you can live somewhere where it's cheaper. I think creativity is
going to be key, right? Looking at what other people are doing. Somehow other people are making it work. Maybe even people like at a young age, how are they doing it? What do they know that I don't? And how do I figure that out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So have we bought the house yet?
Not quite. We're still.
Yeah. Let's say we bought it. Well, now, what else do you want to talk about? Like,
well, now, how do you afford life, right? That was the second part of the question, okay?
The question was a bit long, and there was many
facts. Yeah, that's why the answer
is a bit
long.
How do you afford life, Mark? Well, let's answer that real quick. What do you think?
Don't get advice from Brent on affording life.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah, let's say now you're married, and you have bought a house, and you've got kids on the way.
You vote liberal. Because they give baby bonuses.
Oh, yeah.
Free daycare, right?
Well, I mean, that's something that wasn't covered in the answer. But, yeah, there's going to be baby bonus, and that will probably continue for quite some time. So that you know, I don't know. We don't rely on that, but right now it's a reality. So, like, you know, there's that, that helps because that can be a decent amount every month, right? Yeah, your costs. I mean, we're looking at sort of a fixed income here, and how do I do this all on this income, right? You're not allowing any room for that income to grow. Mm-hmm. And I've said it.
That's a pest.
You don't have 8-year-olds, right? You have a baby 9 months after you find out you're having a kid or whatever. You have time.
Generally, you've got a baby.
You have time to build up your,
yeah,
your income. And your,
it's a pessimistic.
Yeah, because as you get older, hopefully.
You're saying it's a pessimistic view if you're just going to make the same amount of money for your entire life.
Well, yeah, either pessimistic or just not necessarily realistic. Your income, as you get better at your job, right? Like I said, young people's time is worth less. But as you get older, and if you're reasonably successful in what you do, like if you're in the trades, you're going to eventually make more money.
Yeah.
You should. Wherever you are. I mean, side note is like also plan your career a little bit to make sure you can't be automated out of a job. Like don't go to school and learn something where in 5 years a robot's going to be doing that job for you. So maybe that's a separate episode, but just something to think about. Something
caveat.
Right? No, you want to have a career where you can keep on making more money, right? As you make more kids, then you make more money as well. And I don't know, I've talked to people who are successful. I've seen, this is all anecdotal, right? But people who have said, like, every time I had a kid, I made more money somehow. One way or another.
That's hearsay. I don't believe it.
It's hearsay? Is it not admissible?
No.
Kid, you haven't had a kid yet.
No, not because you're going to get a raise at work because you have another kid, but maybe, you know, part of it is that sense of responsibility where, and, you know, I'm an employer.
You can't explain that, though. Like, you can't explain that.
We don't have a scientific study.
Well, like, you can't explain to somebody who doesn't have a kid, like, when you do have a kid, you will make more money. Because of the, like, you don't know what that responsibility entails until you do, and then you'll be more resourceful.
And I'm talking about someone who's intentionally having a child in a marriage and will have some sense of, I'm not talking about someone who's got a bunch of kids and they don't take care of them. Like, yeah, there's no responsibility, but in the right context, you're going to feel that burden and you will be more responsible. And I'm not saying everybody's going to make more money necessarily, but it, you know, it's surprising what could happen as you feel that responsibility on you. And yeah, again, as an employer, if I've got a young guy with no responsibilities and maybe a guy who's got some kids, I'm probably going to hire the one who has some kids because I just would feel he's going to be more responsible. He has more, like, stability. He's got to come to work because he's got bills to pay and he's got kids to pay for. Right? That's a generalization, but I think it's true.
Yeah.
And I, you know what? I think there have been studies, actually, we mentioned this, that show that married men with children make more money. And so you can, you know, why is that? You could, there's many reasons, but I think part of it is just the responsibility and maturity that also benefits you in your working life.
Yeah.
So there's one thing.
Maybe another thing too is that you don't need to figure it all out right away, right? Like, you do financial projections, but like, you're not going to have the next 10 years planned because you don't know what's going to happen, right? And as Christians, we look at it like we're not here to achieve some earthly success, right? Like, we're here to live through the hardships on our path for God's glory. And that's like a totally different mindset than someone in the world who is like, I need to be living here in this beautiful place and I need to have no responsibilities so I can travel the world and no interruptions to my nice lifestyle, and this avocado toast tastes great, right? Like, I think as you can't be a Christian and have avocado toast at the same time. Maybe that's the wrong picture we want to put out there.
Can you have it on non-toasted bread?
Yeah.
If it's just regular bread that's not toasted, then it's okay.
Yeah, it's hardship.
Or maybe with just in guacamole.
It's
hardship.
Yeah. If it's white bread, I don't know. Anyways, that's a rabbit hole. But as Christians, right, we, like, every day is a blessing. every breath is a blessing. Like any finance, like the fact that you can even go to work, or the fact that you can even conceive kids and have kids, right? Like all of these things are just, and that's what this whole podcast is about, is stewardship, right? Like we don't deserve any of it, and we've been given all of it. So whatever you have, the mindset of a Christian is use it for God's glory. Like serve, seek, and actively do that. Like spend your time trying to pursue ways to better yourself and better others so that you can continue to help. Like it's just, that's, I think, what a Christian attitude, all of this stuff is.
Yeah. That's a good point. The idea of stewardship.
Like don't despair about it. Just start plugging away. Like well, God number, will bless your efforts.
Yeah. Pray number one, it. You got to pray about all this too. You can't just make plans and be like, all right, this is what I'm doing. Right. You got to pray that God blesses that. And that if you're not, like if you're not making the right decision, that he shows that to you,
yeah.
Right? You pray for that guidance and that wisdom. And yeah, as like being a steward, you realize this isn't my own. I'm happy with what I have. So you can't be obsessed with planning everything and with making the money
for yourself
and all the financial details. You have to maybe be a little bit obsessive. But not in the sense that this is for me and this is what I want and it all reflects back on me. It's like, how am I going to use this to the best of my ability?
Yeah.
Right? How, if I'm going to buy this house, is this the right thing? Is this going to glorify God?
Yeah.
Is this going
to... question too, at the end, he gets into like, as Christians, we want to be able to give. And
yeah.
If we do have children, we're blessed with children, then when they're older, we want to be able to help them. And trying to balance that and think about that as well, like, should we buy a house now? Should we wait to have kids in order to build up more? And I don't think
thing about like helping kids, because I've done a lot of reflection on, okay, what does it mean to help a kid or to teach a kid? Like, what is our role as Christian parents, right? And is helping them financially helping them? Like, at the base of it, you're also the steward of your children, right? And stewardship financially, like we talk about on the podcast, is very important. But, you know, if you've been blessed with children, like if you're blessed with finances, you steward them, you know, one way. But if you've been blessed with children, that's like you're shepherding them. You're shepherding their heart. They're not your, they're a gift from God and they belong to God. So you're just there stewarding them. Like, what does it mean to help your kids? Well, you know, provide them with a biblical education or teach them God's words so that they can act with confidence according to what's right and wrong in God's word, right? Like they have a conscience that you've helped form and shape because, you know, you've taught them from a young age God's ways and they know that they've been redeemed and they're children of God and they act out of that confidence, right? No matter where they are, they could be the poorest people in the world and not have any financial blessings, right?
Yeah.
The financial blessings can actually be a curse, right? Like if you got wealth and you want to give it to your kids, well, what do your kids think of that, right? Like that, yeah, that's an important part of this whole discussion. But I feel strongly about, you know, showing them Christian values over and above providing for them financially.
Helping your kids is not necessarily financially helping your kids is not necessarily
the most. It's the same thing with loving, right? Like people say, oh, I love this, whatever. It's like, yeah, love is actually self-sacrifice, right? And
love is actions.
Yeah, it's not just a passive tolerance.
So yeah, the same thing, like
shaping
them. But it's God's design, right, for humanity, and it's a beautiful thing if you step back and look at it. Like, yeah, we have parents that give themselves and sacrifice and love their children for years, and even if they don't have the finances, like, yeah, the children also follow in their footsteps, and if you follow in God's ways and you're faithful, like, you will be a blessing to generations. That's part of God's promise, right?
Yeah, and it's kind of ironic that the wealthier we get, the fewer children we have. Yeah. And like, that's just in general in human nature, right? You see maybe a country, like a third world country with a very high birth rate. If it goes through a cycle where it becomes wealthy, or if those people move to the Western, like to a richer country, the birth rates immediately drop.
Yeah.
Right. And you can say there's, you know, well, that's because they're not worried about having maybe infant mortality is high, so they don't need to have as many kids because, you know, if you have 10 and five of them survive, like, yeah, maybe that's one thing. Infant mortality has dropped quite a bit. But part of it is just, you know, the richer we get, the more we think our kids need.
Right.
And that we can't have, and this is a generalization, but that's what I excel in. no, but it's like we're thinking, well, I can't have kids until X, Y, and Z happen or until I have this amount of money, right? It's not the right way to look at it. They're a blessing from God. You have them and you figure it out as you go. Like, I'm not saying be totally irresponsible and don't plan anything.
Yeah, like this mindset of, hey, I want to travel and then I'm going to have kids. Or whatever, like, I don't want anything impeding on my fun for the first so many years, and then I'm gonna do this, and then I'm gonna, like, yeah, you don't even know if you're gonna have kids. You don't even know if you're gonna wake up tomorrow. Yeah. And, like, what's the joy? Like, imagine if you had kids and you could travel with your kids, even if it's, like, going on half as many trips, but you have those memories for the next 60 years with your kid. Like, imagine how beautiful that will be.
Yeah.
Right? As opposed to traveling. Hey, before you were born, we went on all these amazing trips. Yeah. It was so nice.
Here's our photo albums.
Yeah. And here's our photo albums. Yeah. So, well, thanks, mom and dad. Like, I didn't get to go on any of that. And I don't have any siblings. And, like, where's the joy in that, right?
Well, I think there's a time for that. Like, when you're when you're 18.
There is, but it can't be the focus.
Not when you're 30.
It's called a honeymoon.
Yeah. No, but I don't know. If you have a gap year or something, anyways, you want to
this
travel.
This is a ranty episode, man.
Yeah. Ranty. Do that then. But that's not a reason not to have kids. I 100% agree.
Having less. And there's kind of a beauty to
And be okay with your kids having less. Right?
Yeah. Think about how much you even have.
Like, not
our grandparents and great-grandparents had a lot less than we did.
Yeah.
They made it happen with holes in the wall.
And they were arguably happy. Yes. Yeah. They were arguably happier, too.
Your sheets frozen to the wall. And snow
tells us a story when he was a kid. He had holes in the walls. And I tried to get on the boat from over here. And, they discovered the telescope.
Yeah, no, it was a good time. No, it's currently I have holes in the wall. That's from my kids, though. okay, so we've kind of gone through, like, hopefully we figured out ways to buy a house, and now we're trying to, like, how do we afford it, right? So I think the first thing is, like, get the house and then figure out the affordability after. And I'm not saying that flippantly, but, you know, a little bit, like, I don't know, you have to trust in God a little bit. And, you know, getting the down payment and buying the house is the hardest. I think the hardest part. After that, you figure it out. You know, okay, here's my finances. So I have to adjust my life or my work or whatever to do that.
Talk
right?
about this for a second. Cause,
let's do it.
So we've bought a bunch of houses, right? And that's what we do. So we help clients buy houses, right? So every time we go through this, we see this, like, anxiety and worry for the first, like, you know, 8 months when they're shopping for a house and they're like, oh, I'm going to buy, like, is this too much? And we look at it and we offer and then, like, oh, I don't know. The second you get an offer accepted and you are in the game, it's a totally different mindset, right? You might have a little bit of anxiety, but it goes way down and you're resourceful. You're like, all right, we got a deal. So now what? We have parameters or guidelines to work within. Yeah, so now we know. Now we know how much it is. We know where it is. We know what it is. Now what can we do with it?
Yeah.
And maybe this is where, like, my background as a designer, that's just kind of how I think, right? So you think as a designer, what you're trained to do is, like, discuss and find out what the limitations are that you're working within, find out where you can push them, and then find out the best option to move forward that will help improve this product or service or whatever for the most amount of people, right? So with a house, it's kind of the same sort of thing, right? You're like, once you get that deal accepted, your anxiety goes, oh, okay, now I'm focusing on this. It's not like all of the problems out there and I don't know what's going to happen. It's like, no, this is your house now, right? So now what are you going to do? Are you going to show up there with a shovel and start digging, or are you going to show up there with a hammer and start putting this up, or what? Like, right now you're thinking, like, what can we do with this? Right. It's a totally different mindset. And that's where the rubber hits the road on, like, well, we have responsibility. We got to show they're up there on Saturday. We can't go to the hockey tournament or the soccer tournament or, like, to our buddy's place, like, our buddy's got to come over and we got to gut this room because it's not livable, right? Like, yeah. We just have to do it. Like, Dad, can I borrow your truck? Like,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
taking on.
Where am I going to dump this material for free? Yeah. Right? Like, you're thinking resourcefully about specific little problems that come up rather than like generic, like, oh, how do I make the numbers work? It's like, no. If you don't have the money today, you're going to go out this week and you're going to find the money for the mortgage payment that week. And in the meantime, you're spending all your spare time fixing up that bathroom so it's ready to go for tenants next
that's
month.
That's not fair, Brett.
Right? But what it's you're like doing is you're basically breaking the problem into micro problems and you're solving them with tons of tenacity.
Yeah.
One it's like that for everything. Like, you don't wait till you know all the different things. You just jump into it.
Yeah.
Like,
wait till you know about having kids.
Then you figure it out. Right? Yeah. You have a house. Now, okay, we got to figure it out. Otherwise, you know, what was the point?
So I'm the oldest brother and Dad figured everything out on us.
Sorry, no, but that's I think my that's, rant. That's, yeah, no, you're right. You have to have a plan and a foundation to jump off from, but at some point you got to jump off from it. Yeah. And then, I mean, you know, let's say everything doesn't work out. You can always sell the house.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, not ideal and maybe.
Well, and the other thing is, it's not going to all work out, right? And that's another thing you learn in life. Like, it's not going to be what you think. It's never. Yeah. Ask any business owner, any parent, any like person in leadership or whatever. It's not what you think it is. You just start doing stuff and you course correct and fix it as you go, right? Yeah. So you get this house. Oh, I thought there was that, but like I totally forgot there was wallpaper on that wall, right? Yeah. Like you just forget dumb things like that, right? Let alone opening up the walls and who knows what's behind there, right? So you're never gonna, and like, yeah, it's, you post the unit on the market to rent it. Who do you, like, you can't plan who's going to come and rent your unit, right? You can't plan what the price is. Like, you can't plan any of this.
Yeah.
But you can either sit around and not do it or do it at bite-sized pieces and get her done, right?
Well, generally, that's the thing about taking action is you develop competence.
Yeah.
That you may not have had before, yeah. Right? And you, because you either deal with a problem or you die, right?
Oh, snap.
Well, not die, but like, or everything goes.
You get thrown under the bus by Mark.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but like you said, you have to deal with the issues that come up. Yeah. So, you know, they're in the question. There's, okay, what about school payments? Like, you don't have school payments right away.
Yeah.
You have some time to plan for that and think about it.
And you might not even have them if you homeschool or like.
Yeah. I mean, that's an option, right? Yeah. I'm not beating up Christian education. Our kids go to a great Christian school. The first person responsible for educating the children is the parent.
And that never changes.
Yeah. So that's the model. You educate your kids. Now, if you have the ability to send them to a good Christian school and it is a good alternative to homes, like teaching them yourself, then, and like, we've kind of worked that out. That's generally what a lot of Christians do. Like, perfect. Then you do that. But let's, you know, don't just say that it's an assumption you have to do it. But you also have time, right? If you're just starting to have kids, or maybe you're married and your kids aren't in the picture yet, you've got some time to figure that
also,
out.
Also, Christian education, like in our communities, like you're paying for it because the government doesn't pay for it, right? But you're also not paying for the cost of education. Like there's donations to, like, you don't even know what goes on behind the scenes. So like, to run the school, there's actually other people who give money to the school, right? So you're not actually paying the cost. So that's a beautiful thing as well, right? Like homeschooling is an option. Christian education, it's actually not as expensive as it could be, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Anyways, what were you were just saying how...
Well, no, I was just bringing up the education part is you got some time to figure that out. So don't let that stop you from getting a house, right? If you're sort of on that track.
Yeah, if that's what you want.
I mean, nothing is cheap, right?
Yeah.
So that was one thing that was brought up, right? As like $2,000 a month, for example.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, for someone who's 20 and just whatever, they just bought a house and have a kid. You're not facing that expense yet. You got some time to
work it
out.
Well, and the logic of this is that, okay, these are all the expenses that I can think of, which is a good thing to think about, right?
Like,
what am I all going to have to be responsible for? All right. You know, but then to think about your income and just say, well, my income is X dollars per hour and I would just have to work more to get the money to pay for those things.
Yeah.
Like I would probably try and take issue with that mindset and say, look, well, What if you work the same?
Maybe right now you have to work more, but hopefully in the future you can work the same and be worth more.
But you spend your time on educating yourself and learning and growing and developing and trying to be creative with, like, money's rewarded, right? Or like to people who actually do these things, right? I don't know how to say it, but
yeah, like you can start a podcast.
Don't just think about trading your time for money. That's a really bad idea. Yeah. How many hours do you spend doing this and not making any money?
Well, no, you're right. You develop other skills. And like you said, you do what you have to do to make that money. And also keep in mind, if there's a spouse at home with the kids, that doesn't necessarily mean that's all they do, right? Maybe they have some skills. And like, that's easy for me to say because I'm not the one necessarily at home with the kids. But there's I know so many people who do that where the wife has skills and she does some stuff part-time to make money. Again, online, you can do a gajillion things.
That being a good thing, right? Like in Proverbs, it talks about the woman goes out to market and she provides for her house also.
I tried to tell my wife that. Like, I just want to go sit in the gate every day
And come here, and chat with the elders.
Yeah, but hasn't happened yet. No, but you're right. Yeah, there is a biblical imperative that, you know, a wife isn't, I don't know, it's not a passive thing.
Home raising kids.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's not a just, like, now we're into marriage counseling and...
No, but the point is there are options to make more money if you need more money.
Yeah, well, and my critique of this mindset is that if thinking the way to get more money is to just put in more time... Like, what is the logical conclusion there is...
Eventually, you run out of time.
Yeah. Like, you're not... Your expenses go up, right? But your time is just limited, right? So, how can you make more money, right? And this is where you have to kind of take matters into your own hands, maybe, right?
Into your own hams.
Hams. Hands.
Hams, if you're a pig farmer.
Yeah.
Take matters into your own hams. Well, so we talk about leverage, right, in real estate, right, and how that's like the basic thing about real estate is you get leverage. But there's a reason so many people in our community are self-employed, right? And part of that, the beauty of business, if you have employees, is leverage, right? Because like you said, you can work more and more and more, but there's an upper limit on that. So how do you do that? Well, you leverage your time, you get employees. And that's, you know, not everybody can do that. But you either find a way to make your time worth more, and maybe that's just you're working for yourself and by yourself, or maybe you can leverage up and you start hiring employees.
You have to leverage something. You leverage your skills and you...
Yeah. Yeah, always leverage.
Yeah, so, and that was what Jimmy Song was commenting on that episode. He was talking about adding value.
Yeah.
Like, value is rewarded in the marketplace, right? You can actually bring value to somebody, they'll pay for it, right?
Yeah.
Because it's adding value to their life. So that's actually a Christian attitude too, right? Like, seek to serve other people. If you're actually not looking for money and just going out and say like, oh, I got to make more money, I'm going to like... Yeah, well, everybody's trying to do that, right? Like, what if you flipped it around and said, how can I serve other people? You will be rewarded, right? Like, you'll be rewarded much greater than what you ever thought, right? Like, even if you seek to serve your employer.
Are you one of them prosperity gospel?
No, I'm just saying, even if you seek to serve your employer wholeheartedly, right? Like, God will bless you. Prosperity gospel.
Feels targeted at me.
Yeah. A little bit. Yep. Serve your employer. No, I think you're right.
It doesn't go unnoticed, right?
It doesn't. And a lot of values that we get from the Bible are also practical. They're not just like do this and it's all spiritual. There's practical implications. But I do want to say, you know, sometimes the reward for serving in the kingdom is serving in the kingdom.
Yeah.
The actual thing you're doing is the reward, and people don't get that either. There's not always going to be a monetary benefit to it. Like, I don't know, you can work with I don't know. There's lots of examples where you could do stuff and you'll never see any kind of reward from that, but that's not why you're doing it. But that is like, the reward itself.
You come home at the end of the day feeling fulfilled and like you were a blessing to other people, right? And that can be a rewarding.
Sometimes you're working with people and it's like smashing your head against the wall.
Yeah.
No, like honestly, speaking from experience, it's like, and so... Well, being an elder,
I can tell looking at your head.
Yeah, it's all and flat the walls. On the front. No, but part of like shepherding people in the church as well, and you're an elder, is like it's kind of letting people know this as well. Like you may never see an earthly reward for the thing that you're doing.
Yeah.
Although you do have a reward, like you have that foretaste of the kingdom of God, where you're working in, you're more involved in His kingdom now. And sometimes you work with people, I don't know, I'm just thinking of like our church specifically, right? Where we're, you know, missional and we're dealing with a lot of people who don't know Jesus. And sometimes they have mental health or addictions problems, right? And sometimes you don't see that reward in your lifetime anyways, where you're working with somebody for a long time and then they just end up rejecting everything and walking away and their life goes to poop. And that's like, that's so frustrating and it's hard on people.
Yeah.
But you know, what I've come to realize and tell people as well is like, no, that was the reward working with that person. You're working in the vineyard of your Father, right? What else do you want? People will give up years of their life to work on a presidential campaign or to, I don't know, like you think of groupies, right? They'll give up so much to just be around a rock star or something, right? Like you'll give up so much of your life to just to be able to work. The presidential campaign is a good example, to work with that person in their sort of kingdom, right? We don't take that same attitude towards kingdom work where like we'll give it up. And if we never get any reward, just being around that person or just working on their campaign is the actual reward because that's what you believe in. So, it's not going to help you buy a house necessarily, but I just wanted to point that out.
You need a house. Do not lay up your treasures on earth.
No.
Yeah. We're moths.
Well, we have discovered that the way to buy a house is to figure it out and then just jump in.
I mean, I think that's a good example. Like, you got to plan it out. Get that house while you still can,
well,
I think.
To summarize his comments, he's saying, I find it frustrating when people say you should just work hard and everything will work out.
And that's the conclusion we came to. Okay. Yeah. Unlucky.
No, you have to take specific steps. Yeah. I think we had some specific things in here. Yeah. But yeah, it's not all, there's not a blueprint to be like, do this, 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 and this, and then you will have a house. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just,
if this causes anyone to have further questions, they can send them in to the show.
Yeah.
We will dance around them for hours.
Yeah. Mark's a good dancer.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but we tend to have this this view of like previous generations, they had it so easy. Like, just go talk to them. They didn't have it so easy.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, right? Too. Like, we're reading this book and it basically just calls you out and says, ask an old person what their first job was.
Should have an old person over.
Yeah. Like, ask your grandparents. Oh. Ask Mark's grandparents what their first job was. And, like, we've done it with our grandparents. We've done it with some other older folks. And, like, it's eye-opening. Like, your first job, first of all, their first job was when they're, like, seven.
Yeah.
And then the jobs are like, what? You're doing that? Like, oh, man. Yeah. I don't know if I would ever do that, right? And not for a dollar or a penny a day or whatever they got paid, right? So it's eye-opening. But anyways, we should wrap this up because, like, how long is a two-hour podcast? Or
yeah, no, it's long. Anyways, well, I mean, hopefully that gave some answers. So, you know, if you're listening to the podcast and saying, like, you guys have the answers and you're just not telling us, like, no, we don't have the answers. We have a framework. And I think that's the best that we can.
We started the podcast to try and figure out the answers. So.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's going to be hard. And yeah, we've kind of gone from, like, you know, the young couple making these steps, but there's lots of people in between, right? Where like, well, I'm past all of that. I can't plan any of that anymore. I mean, just take what you can, I guess. And
I always tell my wife, it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah.
And she doesn't like to hear that, so.
But anyways, Gideon, I expect you to have a home within the next 6 months. And
Make it happen. Just jump in.
Yeah. Anyways, hopefully that answered some of the questions that we got. And I know that there's been other, you know, other listeners as well who've kind of asked me some of the similar things. So there you go. That's as much as we know, which isn't much. Yeah?
Yeah.
So thanks for being on the podcast, kid.
Oh, yeah.
Appreciate it. Maybe you can go dye your hair blue and have some avocado toast after this. To our listeners, thanks for listening, folks. And until next time,
steward your wealth wisely.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Two Stewards Show. If you like my voice better, click subscribe.
And if you like my voice better, click share.
If you like both, give us a 5-star rating.
To interact with the show, feel free to reach out at hello@twostewards.ca.
We will see you in the next episode. In the meantime, steward your wealth wisely.